This is WFYI HD2 Indianapolis, The Point.
What do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
Oh, what do you feel like doing tonight?
I don't know, Ange. What do you feel like doing?
We're back to that, huh? I say to you, what do you feel like doing tonight? And you say back to me, I don't know, what do you feel like doing tonight? Then we wind up sitting around your house with a couple of cans of beer watching a hit parade on television.
Let's go to movies.
Director!
This is a frightened city.
Wait for it! Director! Cut!
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for a new film talk show, Film Sociology, with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Sosie!
No, that's Matthew Sosie.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosie.
Film lovers, and welcome to Film Sociology, the film talk show here at WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. It's also available as a podcast. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. It's just me and Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap today. It's a very busy Friday in Indianapolis. Glad you could parade the traffic, Chris, and get here at the town.
Yeah, glad I was coming in from the north side and not from downtown, which is already...
Word has it downtown is officially a zoo, and there's still about three or four people in the WFYI complex, I believe, at the time of this show.
I did notice a lot of people seem to be on the road, heading out of work a little early this Friday. Don't blame them at all.
So our tax dollars hopefully being put to good use, and hopefully lots of commerce money coming in.
Let's hope.
So
our roads need fixing.
Among other things. So, yes, so hope you're having a good weekend. Now, if you need a break from all of the Butler hoopla, you might be done with the CBS overanalysis of this and that. And let's stop calling Butler a Cinderella team. Their program has been rock solid for years. And by the way, sportscasters, Cinderella doesn't turn into a pumpkin if they lose.
Right. I think they were actually ranked between like 12 and 18 in most preseason polls, so it's not like they're coming out of nowhere.
Yeah, George Mason is a one-hit wonder. Butler, no, not so much. So, but anyway, that's a different show. We have to separate the sports and the arts here at Film Sociology. No, we don't. That's not true. Hoop Dreams is the greatest basketball movie ever made, no matter what Scott Hoke tells me. I'm sorry, we debated about Hoop Dreams versus Hoosiers earlier.
You divide them up, narrative versus fiction. That's a very easy split, and then you can say each is the best on their own field.
Okay, fair enough. We'll get to that in a little bit. Maybe if we have time, we'll talk about basketball movies. But first, here at Film Sociology, I do not buckle under what should be the first film that is reviewed. Just because the biggest film opens doesn't necessarily mean we open with that. So there are three films that open this weekend that between the two of us and Emma, she'll be in just a moment, saw this week. And I don't want to start with Clash of the Titans. I want to start with A Prophet. I thought once the Academy Awards were over that we were done watching Academy Award nominated or winning pictures, because that's usually the natural circle of theater life. But lo and behold, we got a nice little gem. We got a film that was up for Best Foreign Film, and it finally came to Indianapolis, which is kind of a blessing and a burden that we here at the IFCA keep trying to fix and get this film to us sooner.
Yeah, I think there's still two or three other of the foreign language film nominees that have not yet opened here. I think this is only the second or third open.
So. Not to mention that Messenger still, and I wouldn't be surprised if we don't get that at all.
I believe that's coming out on video very soon.
So great. We'll finally get to talk about it.
I'm really not sure
it.
What happened with Messenger. Someone told me they thought it actually played at Landmark for a week last year, and I was like, I don't
I think
don't
we
remember.
Would have been – I think we some of us film guys would have been all over that one.
We would have noticed.
Yes, we would have noticed.
At the very least, to squawk about why we didn't get our screening.
Which is what we do here at the IFJA.
Which is pretty much why we exist.
I thought it was because we were all doughy white guys with glasses.
Well, that too. We need to add some diversity to our group.
I said at the runaway screening, if a girl shows up, it's going to be like a Trek party.
Yeah.
So we'll get to that. Anyway, here's a sample of the French film up for best foreign film this year, A Prophet.
Vous avez quelqu'un dehors ?
Non, chef.
Ici, à l'intérieur, vous connaissez du monde, amis, ennemis ?
Personne, chef.
Ça va très bien, à la marche. J'ai eu des problèmes dans la cour. Tu crois que tu vas tenir longtemps sans protection ?
Il y a un mec qui t'a parlé. Tu le connais ?
Pourquoi ?
Si tu le tues pas, c'est moi qui te tue. Sauf pour moi, tu rentres et t'es payé.
Tu parles avec les barbus, tu parles avec les Corses, tu fais le grand écart.
Tu nous proposes un arrangement, les planques, les bagnoles, les fournisseurs, tout. On prend le marché et là, on pèse.
C'est à cause de moi. Si tu rêves, si tu penses, si tu vis, c'est à cause de moi.
Comment tu fais ça? Subhanallah, t'es
un prophète ou quoi?
Yes, here at Film Sociology, we play the trailers no matter what language they're in, so deal with it.
No subtitles for audio.
No, I'm afraid not. We couldn't get one of the still living trailer guys to do In a Prison World or what have you. Basically, it's the story of a young man of a mixed race who... is sentenced to 6 years in a very nasty French prison. No, and you should say, is it the French Oz? Les Oz, maybe. But you see his rise to power from being a young scrub in prison all the way up to basically running the joint.
Yeah.
And as I was saying to Chris after the screening and earlier, if you saw the Academy Award-nominated film last year from France called The Class, it has a very similar feel, very handheld documentary, You Are There, You're There, very intense look at, in this case, prison life.
Yeah, I think that's a terrific insight. It's got this very episodic feel in that it does not have a traditional Hollywood movie story arc of, you know, things exposition, things building, get to a crescendo, and then, you know, the denouement and more like that. It's very much this feeling of it's a long movie. I think it's just
It's about two and a half.
Two and a half hours.
It covers this guy's 6 years of prison. Fortunately, for the most part, it doesn't feel like 6 years.
No.
For the most part.
I will confess, I mean, the film does drag at points.
I think about hour two, it starts to just dip a bit.
Yeah. The basic setup is that this character gets in cahoots against his will with some Italians, specifically Sardinian mobsters, and sort of is their boy doing their beck and call. And slowly over time, his own power and influence gains. He starts doing his own side business as a drug dealer in and outside of prison. And there's a section where he gets these leaves where he can leave prison for a day, and he spends his day out of prison.
Not happening in the United States.
Doing nothing but committing crimes for himself and for this mafioso, who's an actor I can't pronounce his name or even remember it at this point, but playing the head mafioso, absolutely wonderful performance.
It reminded me a little bit of, for lack of a better comparison, because I'm going to throw titles, and they're not like it, but it's like, if you like this, you know, I mentioned Oz, there's a little bit of Goodfellas, even Donnie Brasco, death of a mobster. I mean, this guy is kind of a Al Pacino / Willie Loman. He was once the most powerful man in organized crime in France, and he's a bit long in the tooth, especially going up against the Muslim group, but there's that aspect, and this is one of those films that I tell it you know, it bugs me to no end when people say they don't want to read subtitles, but this seems like a universal story.
Yeah.
There is prison and there is crime, and there's crime in prison no matter what language it's in.
Yeah, and it's a very frightening setting, I have to say. This prison of, you know, you watch a movie like this noting the similarities to American prison movies. I would say noting the similarities to American prisons, but I haven't actually been in one.
Thank you.
But at least not as an inmate.
You're right.
But, yeah, you do wonder, because the guys seem to have more or less free rein to walk around the prison.
Real free rein.
And, boy, do they use it. There are stabbings and... We should also mention there's a supernatural element in that, you know, his initiation into this crime syndicate there is that he's ordered to kill a fellow Arab. I don't think the guy he kills is actually a Muslim. He's just another Arab.
But also somebody who has a link to another case.
Right. And then this character that he kills then starts appearing to him and essentially, after his death, befriends the character Malik and, you know, counsels him, you know, tells him what he should be doing, that sort of thing. It's a really interesting device.
And fortunately, a device that doesn't get old. It goes to the well a few times and doesn't quite wear out its welcome.
He's not like in every scene. He goes away for 20 minutes, he comes back, but it's really I think on some levels, it's a slow-moving movie. I will say that. There's going to be certain people who aren't, you know, familiar with that type of storytelling that might grow impatient. But I think it's really a very worthwhile film, and certainly I can understand why it was nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah, the actor who plays Malik, in my notes I refer to as love child of Jim Caviezel and Danny Freeman.
Yeah.
Danny Freeman. And, yeah, his initiation scene, basically, we're not giving away a whole hell of a lot, but he has to learn how to keep a razor in his jaw.
Yeah.
And I haven't closed my eyes in a movie since Antichrist.
Yeah.
And well, not nearly as much, but it was really, there's some naturally cringe-inducing moments between this and Assassination, the setup itself. I mean, it is at times very uncomfortable, but pretty riveting to watch for the most part.
Yeah, definitely. That scene really lingers. I was actually shaving not too long before coming here because I like to look pretty for you, Matthew. And
tell us apart, because I haven't shaved since, I think, October.
But, yeah, I will tell you, that scene did come up in my mind while I was shaving. One other film, you mentioned some great ones. The Donnie Brasco, I think, is a terrific comparison, this idea of a young and initiating himself with an older man within the group. But also the granddaddy of mob movies, The Godfather, I think, the first Godfather, there's a very, very nice parallel there, and that you start with this very young character, and you sort of see him over the arc slowly. I mean, it's not an abrupt sort of thing.
Right.
Slowly take on all the... You know, takes on some of the character
responsibilities and characteristics.
Exactly, and it's really quite an amazing transformation.
And scenes in the yard help kind of remind you where you are in time between the relationship between Malik and the prison. And the last image is pretty solid.
Yeah.
It's not a happy ending. It's not a sad ending. But it's the end of his sentence. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
So overall, it's in town. You might need a break from basketball analysis. Go check it out.
Yes.
Okay, now we'll move on to the big movie. Is that okay? It's Clash of the Titans. It is a remake of the 1981 feathered hair epic of Swords and Sandals. I'm sorry, I watched the original this week. It was on Turner Classics.
Oh yeah.
And had to revisit. And I try not to do this because you try to review the film in and of itself. But boy, you got there's a mini Schindler's List reunion with Liam Neeson, Ralph Fiennes, Sam Worthington's in this, Pete Postlethwaite, Elizabeth McGovern, and many, many others. We'll get to the cast, but first, give a listen to this.
One day, somebody's going to have to make a stand. One day, somebody's got to say enough.
by the way, there is no rock music in the film, even if it is from the director of The Incredible Hulk and Transporter 2. Yeah, it shows. Okay. There's one line that just sums up this movie for me in the most part, and it's when Sam Worthington, who plays Perseus without the feathered hair and the mini dress, but when talking about Medusa, he basically says, "Don't look the bitch in the eyes." This is a very serious adventure movie of fun, apparently, and I understand why they remade it, because if you look at 1981's version, well, technology is here.
Even for 1981, you know, with the Ray, you know, and I,
Ray Harryhausen, yes,
he's a cinematic god.
Yes,
but I mean, if you look at what people are using stop motion animation for these days, it's only for, you know, hyper, you know, realistic fantasy worlds like Coraline, that sort of thing.
Right.
Because you can just never get the motions down very smooth. And so when they did it for the monsters and everything else in the first movie, even in 1981, it looked pretty hokey.
Right. So now we move to, we have technology. This was shot in, well, it's available in 3D.
Yeah.
I saw it in 3D. You don't need to see it in 3D.
Yeah, now people need to understand, you know, all these movies that are coming out now, because there's literally like more than 15 of them just in this year. The vast majority of them were shot in 2D, and when Avatar, you know, made a gajillion dollars, I think it's actually at 1.3
gajillion dollars
right now,
yeah.
They said, we got to jump on this bandwagon. And so the problem is, all these other movies, you know, they spent a few bucks. What they're basically saying is, like, we'll spend $10 million to, you know, after the fact, fix this thing up with 3D, and we'll make it on the back end because they charge $2, $3, $4, $5 more for the 3D
right.
version.
Three. I saw it for $8 at 10:30 this morning.
So, but the problem is, the effect varies from movie to movie. Like, for, I thought it was actually pretty good for How to Train Your Dragon from last week. Some problems, but still look pretty good. This movie, the 3D does not look good. I mean, there's actually scenes there where, you know, just within one individual's head, like at one point the character of Andromeda had her hair pulled back, like in a tail type thing. And so when you looked at her, it looked like her hair was like down a long tunnel from her face. It really looked strange.
Yeah, and so there's that aspect to it. And it's a revenge film. I don't remember. You know, the original Clash of the Titans was this young man, was Harry Hamlin's rise to I don't know, his Greek mythology bar mitzvah, I suppose. And in this one, it's a revenge flick. And not only a revenge flick, an ensemble revenge flick. So I had some issues with this.
Yeah, my take on this movie is I did like it. What I put in my review was, you know, people, you know, our age regard the original movie with warm nostalgia, even though we recognize that it is a pretty hokey movie. And I guess that's kind of the way I feel about this one. It's still a pretty hokey movie with, you know, the new age special effects. But gosh darn it, I still had fun. I still enjoyed it. I mean, there's some things about it that did bother me. The thing that bothered me most was the thing I really loved from the first movie is all of the Greek gods up there with remind me of the actors' names, Laurence Olivier.
Oh, Laurence Olivier, Zeus, Maggie Smith, the visually stunning, as I called her, Ursula Undressed,
yes,
as Aphrodite. That's a great casting choice if there ever was one.
Yeah.
Claire Bloom, I believe.
Claire Bloom played, which one did she play? Hera?
I believe so, yeah.
Just a terrific cast. And the thing was, this whole concept of the gods, these jealous supernatural beings using the humans on Earth as their playthings, literally as chess pieces. And I just love
that's
that whole...
not in here. And basically you have a brother betrayal between Liam Neeson and Ralph Fiennes. And by the way, Ralph Fiennes looks like he's auditioning for Battlefield Earth. It's really...
As Hades.
Still, yeah, I know he's Hades, but he still looks like John Travolta's Scientology project.
I still thought he was pretty cool, the way he moves about by dissolving into like this black mist, and, you know, he always speaks in sort of a whisper, which I know is the same thing he did in Harry Potter, but...
But he has a nose in this one.
He has a nose, a face.
He has
a nose in this one. It's still pretty cool. You do have to understand, for, you know, classical teachers watched the first one and were just appalled, because it is an absolute mishmash of Greek, you know, taking stories from Perseus and Hercules and stuff that, you know, the character of Calibos, the half-demon villain from the first movie, who's... The character is in the second one, but it's much smaller part.
Yeah.
Calibos is an absolute creation, you know, made out of whole cloth. Like, for instance, in the first movie, Calibos was punished and turned into a half-demon because he killed most of Zeus's prized herd of Pegasus. And in the actual legend, Pegasus sprung forth from the head of Medusa when Perseus slew her. So they're really, we're just mashing, mixing and matching some of the Greek legends.
Not to mention the Greek god Testicles. The other thing, and you brought this up, and I'm glad you did, and I'll give you credit on this one. Well, one, anytime I see one of my favorite that guys, Pete Postlethwaite, who plays Perseus's, Earth Dad, is in here. But he is married to
Elizabeth McGovern, who I did misidentify originally in a Twitter post, which I apologize.
Okay, but one, it's nice seeing Elizabeth McGovern. It does kind of show her age a little bit, but chalk one up for the character actor guys to shack up with Elizabeth McGovern in this picture.
Yeah, good for them. Still, you know, as they say, a dumb, fun movie.
Okay, well, more fun for you than for me, so we'll
Potter, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Now, that being said, I have to say, I wasn't really that big of a fan of the original Clash of the Titans to begin with. And I'll say that I think, personally, because I was 11 when that came out, and I blame Mr. Lucas and Mr. Spielberg for kind of raising the bar a little bit, I guess, in the sci-fi.
Yeah.
So once you get these, you know, feathered hair and short mini skirt dresses on Harry Hamlin.
Man skirts.
You know, man skirts and Laurence Olivier, who I think even, I even knew then, I'm like, you're just helping out the National Theater in London by appearing in this. But the Harryhausen stuff, still really cool to watch. I mean, it's not as prominent as, say, Jason and the Argonauts and some of his earlier work, but it was just funny to see, you know, a close-up of a horse and then a Harryhausen Pegasus thing. And I did see, during the flood, one extra wearing blue gym shorts under his toga. Thank you, the power of technology and the pause button. That's just kind of what Clash was in 1981. And by the way, that probably was the best because that was followed by, you know, Sword and a Sorcerer and Lou Ferrigno as Hercules and just a bunch of bad sword and sandal movies that have no...
Yeah. The
fantasy, and Conan.
The fantasy genre really kind of went off the rails there. It was dead by 85, not until Peter Jackson brought it back with First Lord of the Rings.
Yes, which, by the way, it's still running. It's that long. Yeah, I'm one of those. Deal with it. Okay, now we'll move on to a film that, well, I'm going to have to bring in the kids' film critic in just a little bit. The tween critic, I guess, in this one. And I'm surprised. This opened on Wednesday with hope, I guess, that it has a chance against Clash of the Titans. I have no idea how much this picture is going to do, but it's a new film from Miley Cyrus, and this is the post-Hannah Montana edition of Miss Cyrus's career. It's called The Last Song. It's based on a novel by, yes, Nicholas Sparks. You know, yeah, you kind of know what, if you know that name, you know what's going to be happening in this movie, so give it a listen.
Dear Ronnie, please know that none of what happened between your mother and me had anything to do with you. I hope this summer will give us a chance to reconnect.
Yeah! Oh, boy.
You went on the beach? That is awesome.
How's she doing otherwise?
You heard she got into Juilliard, right?
No.
She says she's not going.
We got bacon here. We got breakfast.
Vegetarian, Dad.
Since when?
For a year and a half. It's ridiculous. Do you and Mom ever think about getting back together?
Mom's about to get married.
So? You have kids. You married her first.
Well, the word is you're from New York. So what are you doing down here?
My mom shipped me and my brother to my dad's for the summer.
We'd better maintain visual contact.
Your sister just got kissed. It's all over her face.
No, it's not.
She got kissed. Hey, she was kissed. Take a good
one. No.
Beautiful melody. When the night's so low.
When did you become so mellow?
As soon as I got out of New York City. No one has made me feel like you do, Ronnie.
We make mistakes. We're not perfect, any of us.
I'd probably talk about this with a girlfriend if I had one here, but I don't.
Oh, do you want to talk?
Yeah.
Let's talk. Sometimes you have to be apart from people you love.
But that doesn't mean you love them any less. Sometimes it even makes you love them more.
Stop smiling like that. It's creeping me out.
My smile creepy?
Let's see it. Kinda.
Okay, now, really, who cares what the old guy thinks of the Miley Cyrus movie? Because, well, speaking of creepy, that sounds like it. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. But it is another opportunity to bring back to the microphone film sociology, kids film critic, and Miley Cyrus fan, Emma Sosi. Hello, sweetheart.
Hello.
Straight from her spring break. Emma, you wanted to see this. You had not seen Miley Cyrus do anything that didn't involve a blonde wig and singing. Emma, what did you think of the last song?
I think it was really good.
And what made it really good?
Well, it's sort of like a drama.
Not sort of, honey. It actually is a drama. Sorry.
Well, it's sort of a drama.
How? Okay. And
and it's like a drama, a comedy, and like.
Is it sad?
Yeah.
You're not really giving away the ending if you say it's sad because it's from Nicholas Sparks.
Yeah.
So.
But it's like romantic comedy and a drama.
And drama and sad stuff. So there's lots of emotions going on in this story,
well,
right?
Well, really drama is sad stuff.
I see. Okay. Now, and this is different from Miley because you're used to her in 30-minute increments and singing, and she sings, I guess, in the closing credits. So how do you think Miley did?
Very good.
What was one of your favorite parts of the movie?
One of my favorite parts are when the sea turtles were born.
Ah, yes. There was a plot point in which the Miley Cyrus character bonds with a young man, the young hunky Liam Hemsworth, over the birth of sea turtles on the beach.
Yes.
Because that's what sea turtles do. They bring teenage kids together.
Not really.
No? They don't? Okay. But you enjoyed this thoroughly?
Yes.
You going to tell your friends to go see it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I guess that means this is your reaction to it.
Yes, 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 yes.
And I'm still looking for a female to do that same
one. Why don't you just have me do a recording of it?
Not right now. We'll talk about that later. So there, she'll be back maybe in the second half of the show. That's kids film correspondent Emma Sosi. Thank you, sweetheart.
Woo!
Okay. Now, also in this film, besides Miley, playing the parents, because I love cinematic gene pools, the parents are Kelly Preston and, as The Onion labeled him, the overqualified Greg Kinnear. Okay, she's gone. Here we go. okay, I have a new rule now. The next film based on the novel by Nicholas Sparks, I want it shot like Lars von Trier. I want handheld, 16mm, grainy, because, yes, I'm sure Mr. Sparks is getting a knighthood from the states of Georgia, North and South Carolinas for making their coastal resorts absolutely gorgeous and stunning.
Yeah, if it's Lars, though, it's going to be like some horrific sexual violence.
Well, I didn't say the storyline of Lars von Trier. I just want it shot Dogme style. I don't want that. Although that would have made maybe Knights of Rodanthe a little more interesting.
Oh, boy.
We'll see.
So that's right. Kelly Preston was in it. I know this because she had a premiere of the film at my previous town that I lived in and worked in before coming here, which is Ocala, Florida, which is actually her now hometown with her and husband John Travolta. And I could spin you yarns about my trying to get an interview with John Travolta.
Really? Well, you don't have the right neutral crystals and Zotar 7 and, or jet skills.
I don't know about that, but boy, that's a story for another time of my years-long effort to sit down with Travolta, and all it took was for me to leave town, and then he immediately gave the newspaper an interview.
How you feel then, though? You all right?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move on. Yeah, the parents are separated, and man, you know what? For Nicholas Sparks, and of course, Nicholas Sparks gave us The Notebook, Message in a Bottle, Knights of Rodanthe, Dear John, which I think you just talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
This one, they cram a lot of story down your throat for an hour and 40 minutes. There's the teen not liking her dad, and then finding the boy, and the boy has a past, and the girlfriend who's jealous of the boyfriend, and of course, it's Nicholas Sparks. Somebody has to get sick and eventually die. So there's just it's like an Altman film, only weepier and not as good.
Now that is a juxtaposition I would never have expected. Miley Cyrus and Altman.
Well, hey, he directed Lohan, remember? That was his last film, and then he died.
And then he died.
But, no, and as far as Lindsay Lohan, or as far as Miley Cyrus. This was a necessary step for her. It's not necessarily a good film, and it's not a great performance. I think in the Not Nouveau Wire review of this, according to secondhand information, Cyrus has already talked about getting an acting teacher. So bully for her on that. But what's funny is she is supposed to be the dark clothes and brooding teenager. And, of course, her version of that is having a nose stud and wearing black and reading Russian literature. And like, the first scene she gets to the Georgia coast, she's in combat boots and wearing all black on the beach. And all the bikini kids are kind of poking fun at her. So it's almost like she's almost trying to thumb her nose at her old image. But once she meets the hunky young kid, she kind of gets back to her semi-bubbly self.
Becomes a beach bunny?
Not quite a beach bunny, but you know, a brooding beach bunny. You know, because those are the best, the ones that are in the two-piece and they read Dostoevsky.
Yeah. Having not seen this film and having not going to see this film.
Yeah, because we got to move on to what's opening next week. That's our lives.
I can tell you that I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what she's trying to accomplish with this. I would predict that you know her Disney fans are not the Hannah Montana fans are not going to go see this.
Well, unless they grew up and they're at the same age that she is.
Well, I think Hannah Montana is a specific phenomenon that you know those kids want to see that. And they want to see her in that. And when she stops doing that, the interest in her is going to subside. Good example is Robert Pattinson. When he played Edward Cullen in the Twilight movies, 8 million girls want to go see him. But he made another movie that's all him being angsty and romantic-y called Remember Me that just absolutely died at the box office.
You saw it, didn't you?
I did. It wasn't bad. It wasn't awful, but it wasn't good.
Was it? Again, quotes that won't make the poster. Wasn't awful.
It was not awful. But seriously, I mean, you would think the you know millions and tens of millions of people girls who bought tickets for that would want to go see Robert Pattinson in this. So those things, you know, they want to see Robert Pattinson be Edward Cullen. They want to see Miley Cyrus be Hannah Montana. That transition is the hard part. Although maybe he'll get them back, or at least their boyfriends back, now that he's Peter Parker, the Spider-Man.
Is that official?
That's apparently official.
See, I know our buddy Joe, and hope he's feeling better. Was it Joe that put it on his?
Well, he got it off IMDb.com.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I'm one of those, I need a poster, I need a trailer before I believe it. Yeah. I'm sorry. I know the internet is a wonderful source of information, but I remember, oh my goodness, over a decade ago when two of my basement-dwelling friends almost came to fisticuffs because one was trying to convince the other that Ken Branagh was going to play young Obi-Wan in the 3 Star Wars films. And after that, I was like, you know what? I don't care until I see proof.
Yeah.
So we'll see about that. But yeah, this was kind of reminiscent of Zac Efron. I remember we all saw 17 again, and you know it was a necessary step for him to get away from High School Musical. It wasn't a great film, and you know he followed that up with Me and Orson Welles, which I still need to see. So yeah, we'll see what Miss Cyrus does next. Again, a necessary step, but
Otto, don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
So you know, bully for her, and you know, don't take any more pictures from Fran Lebowitz, unless you really want to. Okay, we're gonna take a short break. We ran long. That was good. Oh my goodness, wait a minute. We almost forgot. Another sign that spring is here, besides Final Four basketball and spring training, and I'm wearing my sandals. Tonight, the Tibbs Drive-In opens again.
Woo!
Woo-hoo indeed. I can already tell you from, because I don't have the Not Nouveau in front of me, Alice in Wonderland, Clash of the Titans, Wolfman, Green Zone. I think they still have 3 screens with double features. This is the last drive-in in central Indiana, folks. Go, please. My goal this year as a film fan, film critic, and a father is to take the little one to a drive-in, which hasn't happened yet, and I need to do this. So this is my summer 2010 goal.
All right. Yeah, definitely. Seeing movies outdoors is something that, you know, we all our age grew up with, and I don't think that's something that we really want the next generation to lose out on, because it really is, for me, synonymous with spring and summer, is seeing movies outside.
Exactly. And you know what? They still check the trunks. And they still check the glove boxes, so I've been told. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to get to 2 titles on DVD. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
Are either one of these any good?
Sir.
What?
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know what I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
And the video store is open. Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook. Emma Socey, the kids' film correspondent for Film Sociology, is sitting with us back with Christopher Lloyd, one part of the film, yeah. And, well, we move on to DVD, to a film that, okay, I got to eventually stop griping about films they don't screen for us, but this was a film that opened on Christmas Day, and I was working Christmas Day, so
yes.
I didn't get a chance to see it. Yes, thank you, honey, for backing up my proof on that. But for me, surprising action mystery blockbuster Sherlock Holmes with Robert Downey Jr., Jude Law, Rachel McAdams, and it's directed by, I know, Guy Ritchie.
This is very good.
I have a request. Someone I want to see. Sherlock Holmes. You and I are bound together on a journey that will twist the very fabric of nature. Allow me to enlighten you. Tomorrow the world as you know it will end.
Well,
there isn't any time to waste then. Is there?
It does make a considerable difference to me having someone with me on whom I can thoroughly rely.
I was nice to see you once.
Lord Blackwood.
The witness stated that he saw Lord Blackwood rise from the grave.
And erase a force that will alter the course of the world.
He's just as brilliant as you are, and infinitely more devious.
We'll see about that.
Nice touch.
I was simply studying your methods. Should the authorities ask me to hunt you down?
Holmes, leave the case alone.
Case reopened. Save your bullets, Watson.
What was that about saving bullets?
First point of attack, right ear. Two, throat. Three, cracked ribs. In summary, neutralized. You've never complained about my methods before?
I never complain. When do I complain about you practicing the violin at 3 a.m? Your general lack of hygiene,
or your experiment on my dog?
Kill the dog. Again.
I wanted to change the world without separating yours.
I wish you would.
Get that out of my face.
It's not in your face, it's in my hand.
Get what's in your hand out of my face.
They've been flirting like this for hours.
Oh! Are we in trouble?
You have the grand gift of silence. Makes you quite invaluable as a companion.
Well, gang, I have to say, I personally was kind of dreading this film when I first saw the trailer for it last summer. And it's because, Emma, is this seemed like Sherlock Holmes' action hero. Way more swashbuckling and fighting and things of that sort. And also the fact that it's directed by Guy Ritchie, who's given us such frantic films as Snatch, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, and horrible films with Madonna. And you know it's true.
Do you really need that qualifier for any Madonna movie? Oh. Horrible films with Madonna? Isn't that just like saying films
I think
with
there has to be. League of Their Own.
Dick Tracy wasn't bad.
Dick Tracy was right. So.
What are you guys talking about?
We're talking about the movie, honey. I'll get to you, okay? All right, you know what? Hold on. We'll start. Emma, what did you think of Sherlock Holmes? Ladies first.
It was good.
What made it good?
I liked the explosions.
Really?
Yes.
That's your first impression of what you like? The explosions? Also, not the mystery? Not the camaraderie?
Well, also, I really like mysteries.
You do like mysteries?
Yeah.
Something that does, unfortunately, doesn't involve a van and a dog?
Doggy.
Yes.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah, I know. It's nice of you to move past Scooby-Doo when it comes to the mystery department.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you were enjoyed by this? You weren't scared at all?
No.
Okay. So, would you recommend this film to your friends? I mean, do you think other 8-year-olds would enjoy watching Sherlock Holmes?
Not this type.
Not this type? The Basil Rathbone versions, maybe?
Maybe some of my friends that are boys.
Oh.
They might like it. Most of the girls probably wouldn't.
Probably not.
Except for Caroline. She's a tomboy.
Okay. And I'm curious, because I was surprised when you told me you wanted to watch this. How did you first get introduced to the character Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I think the first way I was introduced to it was on Phineas and Ferb, I think. Well, I was introduced to it way before Phineas and Ferb even became. But the first time I ever, like, heard about, like, there were, like, a bunch of books and that type of stuff that I can remember I was introduced to it was Phineas and Ferb.
I thought it was Wishbone.
Oh, yeah, Wishbone, yeah.
You can see on Channel 20 WFYI.
I love Wishbone.
I know you do. Okay, here's Emma's response to Sherlock Holmes.
Yes!
All right, honey, thank you so much for your contribution on today's film sociology.
You're welcome. Bye, everyone.
Yes, bye. All right, that being said, tagging on to what Emma said, was fortunately there turned out to be a better ratio of action and mystery in this film than I had expected. I thought it was going to be all explosions and fights and bells and whistles. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah, I still didn't like it, though.
Still didn't like it?
It is a very expertly made movie. Whatever you want to say about Guy Ritchie, he is a guy with a very distinctive kinetic style. His movies always have an energy to them that you can't deny. And the production values of this movie, the score, very terrific score, the costumes, the settings, all nominated for Oscars, and deservedly so.
Mm-hmm.
So great-looking movie, but I just didn't like the whole concept. Sherlock Holmes is, by definition, a stuffy old-time character, and trying to update him just really seems like, you know, trying to, tape a shark fin onto the back of a turtle. It's just...
Okay, well, with that, and yeah, I know this is not ours or our dad's or our granddad's Sherlock Holmes. It's not Basil Rathbone. It's not even Frank Langella, who I got to see it to do Sherlock Holmes on HBO way back in the early 80s. I did like the camaraderie between Downey and Law.
Yeah, that was good.
It is like, they're like an old married couple, or as I call it, the detective version of His Girl Friday, because Dr. Watson is engaged, and this is his last case, and, well, Holmes is just not going to let that happen by any means necessary.
Yeah, but, you know, this whole idea, you know, he has these scenes where all these many fight scenes where Sherlock Holmes, you know, plans his moves that he's going to do.
That's a Guy Ritchie move, I will say that, where he analyzes, okay, if I hit him here, it's going to do this. If I hit him here, it's going to do that, and so on and so forth. But I think that's the most frantic Ritchie was going to be. I expected the whole film to be at that pace
at that
and tone. And I'm glad it wasn't, because that thing's over 2 hours.
Yeah, Ed, I remember our friend and colleague Ed Johnson Ott, he was really offended by the fact that it was all, you know, just all about making Sherlock Holmes into this martial arts character, and, you know, that Robert Downey Jr. has many, many shirtless scenes to show off his newly...
Because he's 40.
Because he has newly carved abs. Which is great, but, you know, the character is basically, you know...
Yes, he's a coke addict, and he wears, wool jackets and things like that.
Right, and, you know, they have, like, a specific scene where they show, like, he's apparently just been sitting in his apartment with the curtains closed for months. And then he's going to go outside, and he's all, like, you know, and then he's cut like a marathon runner, and he's going to beat up guys and stuff.
He did crunches. He did crunches in the dark.
I did like the really huge French giant that he fights.
Who's not Andre, but should be.
Yeah, the really, really fun role, the really, you know, sort of taking a stock villain role and having some fun with it. I enjoyed that. So, I mean, it's the sort of movie that it hurls itself along under its own momentum, but, you know, if you sit there and try and analyze it...
Oh, no, you can't. And, I mean, I think this is one of those... I think I switched my brain off really early before before going in. So I think overall, this is how I felt.
Now that was a good movie.
And this is how Chris
Otto, felt. Don't flatter yourself. It wasn't that great.
Now one that we both can agree on and is finally on DVD, and hopefully more people will see this when it's on DVD. One of the 10 nominated Best Pictures, and actually this one more deserving than others, In Education. Starring Best Actress nominee Carey Mulligan as a 16-year-old London girl who shacks up with a much, well, not that much, but I'm not defending it, older man played by Peter Sarsgaard, and Alfred Molina plays her dad. Didn't get nominated, that's a shame, but give this a listen.
If I get to university, I'm going to read what I want and wear black.
Now, that shows you're a rebel. They don't want that at Oxford.
No, they don't want people who can think for themselves.
Oh, of course they don't.
Hello, but I'm a music lover and I'm worried about your cello. Jump in!
What's this?
Jenny's been sent some flowers from a chap. Thank you.
Listen, I'm glad I ran into you. What are you doing on Friday?
Nothing.
I won't allow it!
That's him. You got me
right. Hello.
He didn't tell me he had a sister, Jenna. What if I promised to have her back by 11:30?
Very impressive young man.
Danny, these are my friends, Helen and Danny. Shall we?
Sorry. That's all right. It's lovely, isn't it? If you want something, just get David to take you shopping.
In Paris, though, not here.
I'd love to. There's so much I want you to see. When we
kiss. How was your evening? Best night of my life.
My God.
Danny's new boyfriend. He's not my new boyfriend.
You have no idea how boring everything was before I met you.
Go to Oxford no matter what, because if you don't, you'll break my heart.
My choice is to do something hard and boring for the rest of my life, or go to Paris and have fun.
I'd be careful if I were you, Jenny.
I don't need looking after, thank you very much.
They can be quite naughty sometimes.
Come on.
It's a funny world you people live in.
We're not clever like you, so we have to be clever in other ways, because if we weren't, there would be no fun.
All my life, I've been scared. I didn't want you to be scared.
I suppose you think I'm a ruined woman.
You're not a woman.
Action is character. If we never did anything, we wouldn't be anybody.
You sound very old and wise.
I feel old, but not very wise.
Yeah, we're back. Okay. Sorry, we were having fun off the air and none of you know it. This is a film, and I guess, you know, we'll preface this by saying we're two doughy guys with glasses of members of the IFJA. This is a film that could not have been made in the States. Yeah. And what's cool about this film, and we're not condoning the behavior or what have you, but it is a film about a teenage girl and an older man that doesn't really feel that icky.
Yeah.
It's more about this girl getting her own life and her own identity and trying to get out of not only her house but out of her neighborhood, as opposed to just chasing after some guy.
Right.
And that keeps this from becoming a filthy Lolita type story.
Yeah, what's really, there's a lot of really interesting things going on in this film. My favorite part of it is the interaction between the character and her parents and the Peter Sarsgaard character, David, I think was
yes.
his name. And the fact that, you know, her parents are very level-headed, middle-class, straight-laced British working-class type folks. And the idea of their, you know, if you'd said to them, oh, you're going to let your daughter go off and start dating a guy who's 15 to 20 maybe years older.
Twice her age.
Yeah. They would just say absolutely no. But because he comes in and, you know, presents himself to them and basically says, I am intelligent, educated, well-to-do, essentially everything that they want for her daughter
is there.
Yeah.
Just too soon.
They just glom onto him with some terrific supporting performances. Was he nominated for
Alfred support? Molina was not, and the fact that he's had a career this long and has – and we know nominations don't mean what have you, but Alfred Molina's a great right. actor and should get one if he hasn't already, and he deserved it.
He's like a Stanley Tucci, you know.
Right.
When Stanley Tucci was nominated, we're like, oh, this is like the third or fourth for Stanley.
No, you know, it's first. Because there's a scene in the – and you see it in the trailer, there's a scene where he's talking through his daughter's door that as a dad, I really hope I don't have to do in about 10 years, and hopefully you won't have to in about 18
yeah.
or 16.
Yeah. really, you know, interesting other things going on in the movie is, you know, she has these other characters, these two women in her life, teachers, the principal of her school, played by Emma Thompson.
Oh, I'm sorry. Frumpy Emma Thompson and...
Frumpier Olivia Williams as
her
teacher.
Which is not fair.
Which, yeah, you know that they did a really good job when they made Olivia Williams, who I consider one of the most beautiful women in cinema, to look absolutely horrible in this movie. But just the fact that these characters are trying to, you know, at first from a sort of a very adult to child sort of way, and then in a more person-to-person sort of way, trying to counsel and say, you don't want to throw your future away, you don't want to do this. And she really pushes back and essentially says, why should I study and work hard if all that is in it for me is basically your life, you know?
Becoming a teacher or a wife.
Right, exactly.
And kudos, major kudos. Obviously, this is the star turn for Carey Mulligan, who received an Oscar nomination and probably would have had a better chance another year if The Blind Side hadn't been made, or Julie and Julia. But the fact is she has this so many layers for a 16-year-old girl. And you know, there have been other layered teenage roles that we talked about earlier this year. But again, not playing Lolita, not playing a ditz, not playing naive, just a little bit of everything. And this is something really to be seen. And it's so funny because I watched Brothers, which came out on DVD, and she has a small role in that.
Right.
And the fact that she's coming up later this month, or no, later this spring in the sequel to Wall Street. So I'm really hoping she gets to latch on to bigger and better things.
Yeah. The movie, you know, I thought it was a good movie. I wouldn't call it a great movie.
Because there is that aspect of, and I don't think we're giving much away, we're waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah, and there is a sort of predictability to it, to what's going to happen. But this is the sort of movie where it just heralds this breakout performance of just, it really is, I mean, this sounds like a terrible comparison, but it is the Julia Roberts Pretty Woman movie, in that you watch that movie, I mean, obviously the two movies couldn't be more different in tone and subject, but you watched the movie and you said, that's a star.
You didn't say that about Steel Magnolias?
Okay, I didn't see it.
You've never seen Steel Magnolias? You're a guy.
Okay, it's actually on my Netflix queue as we speak.
It's 21 years ago.
Well, I think people took notice of her, but, you know, it was a big ensemble cast.
Right. Well, and yeah, because she had Mystic Pizza and then Steel Magnolias, and then, yes, you're okay, all right, you're valid on that.
I pulled that one out of the nose.
Yeah, I'd make a man card comment, but I don't believe men have cards. Sorry, that's just ridiculous. But no, I'm one of those odd guys. I know way too many lines from Steel Magnolias, and this was before my wife got to play one of the roles at Beef and Boards, so.
I've actually heard Mystic Pizza is better than...
Mystic Pizza, better, different. It's an ensemble. Hey, if anything else, Mystic Pizza has the fantastic Conchita Farrell, always a good thing. So. All right. Well, we went longer than we expected, but we need to raise a glass. John Forsythe is dead. He died at the age of 92, if I remember correctly. Yes, everybody's talking about the TV work. Yes, Charlie and Dynasty and all that. But my first impression of seeing John Forsythe in a film, not just hearing him, was 1979, where he played the really oily, creepy judge in And Justice for All, where he is the thorn in Al Pacino's side and winds up hiring his thorn as a client after the Forsythe character, a well-to-do, respectable judge, is accused of rape. And, man, he is oily as hell in that film.
Boy. It's the sort of thing where you wonder, since he was more known over the last decades of his very long career for his TV work, Is he going to be acknowledged by the film?
Oh, my goodness, that's right.
It's the Farrah Fawcett question, you know, where she was not shown as amongst the people that left this year at the Oscars.
And seriously, folks, I don't mean this to sound morbid, but let the montage be as long as it needs to be.
Right. I mean, really, how hard would it have been to edit her in and make it 3 seconds longer?
And Ricardo Montalban, for that matter. So, no, you're right, but let's see.
They didn't have Ricardo Montalban?
They did not have Ricardo Montalban.
I mean, he had a huge film
career. Can you believe that?
That's
crazy. I know. So here's the thing. Here are some films you could see John Forsythe's image in if he makes a death montage. We already mentioned And Justice for All. Great film. You know, pre-screamy Al Pacino. The Trouble with Harry. A dark comedy from Alfred Hitchcock with a very young Shirley MacLaine and a very even younger Jerry Mathers. Scrooged, the Jacob Marley character. One I just watched recently, only because Gene Simmons had died, but he plays the husband in The Happy Ending from 1969. Richard Brooks directed it. She got a nomination. It's actually quite good. It's, and, you know, it's a the husband role. Here's your trivia. John Forsythe appeared in two Hitchcock films. I just mentioned one, Trouble with Harry. Can you name the other?
Strangers on a Train?
Nope.
Vertigo?
Nope.
All right.
Later. I'll give you a hint. Later, Hitchcock.
Marnie?
Much later.
Torn Curtain?
Later. Now you're just going in order.
Actually, I can't even remember any. What did he make past Torn Curtain?
1969, Topaz.
Oh, that was his last, right?
No, he also did 1972, Frenzy, and the only Hitchcock film I saw when it actually opened in theaters, 1975's Family Plot.
Oh, that's right.
But yeah, he was in Topaz, one of the lesser known and kind of weaker Hitchcock films, but...
Because Hitchcock was basically done after Psycho.
That's not true. What are you talking about? Marnie's really good.
You like Marnie?
And the Birds.
I had a big argument with Kelly Kendall, a former colleague at the Indy Star, and she's now with another magazine. Are we allowed to mention that one?
I call it... Well, let's put it this way. There's Nouveau and there's everything else.
Okay. Shout out to our friend Kelly. But she also is a huge fan of Marnie.
Really?
And so she and I had a throwdown about that one time.
All right, let me get through the titles and we'll finish the show with that. In Cold Blood... I actually kind of forgot he was in Cold Blood. Madam X, really bad Lana Turner movie, and the black and white and Margaret drama, which also was on Mr. Science Theater 3000, Kitten with a Whip. Yes, and Margaret's a villain, and she's after John Forsythe. No, come on, you didn't like The Birds.
Not really. I'm not really a big fan of The Birds.
Didn't like Marnie. You should check Marnie out. I think that's underappreciated.
And that's that and Torn Curtain. I don't think I've seen past that.
Really?
No.
Okay, Topaz is a bit of a dry, a bit of a dry political thing. Frenzy's pretty good. Frenzy's kind of a throwback to the, you know, wrong man type story. And Family Plot's not bad. You know, you got William Devane and Bruce Dern being weird looking at each other, and Barbara Harris and Karen Black also looking weird. But no, they're not bad. It's not Psycho, but I still think he did some semi quality work after 1960.
I don't know. The scene in Marnie that got me was the horse riding scene. I watched that. I was actually in film school at NYU, and I burst out laughing.
Were you the only one that burst out laughing?
Yeah. I was a little bit ostracized at NYU.
Really?
Yeah. Cause, you know,
wow.
You know, they're into the auteur theory, you know, a lot of the academic
Everything theory. They touched was brilliant.
Exactly. You know, and they said, no, he was... Hitchcock was trying to do this, and I said, no, he was trying to do that, but he failed, because even Hitchcock fails.
How dare you say he failed?
Well, it's amazing to me, you know, this idea, the problem with the auteur theory is this idea that you immediately anoint and elevate everything that a particular filmmaker does to some level of goodness or greatness, even if it stinks. You know, like, I was not too long ago watched The Miracle of St. Anna, which I've been meaning to see.
Oh, my God, the Spike Lee war film, that's all over the place.
Spike Lee film, war film. Now, Spike Lee is one of these directors. He's made a lot of good movies. He's made two legitimately great movies, and that movie was incompetent.
Wow.
So, what? Auteur theory,
Wow. So, all right. I'm surprised you haven't corrected me on this in the past, because I know I've done this with, like, the Coen brothers and Soderbergh, that, you know, even their weak, and Terry Gilliam, even their weakest stuff is better than most of the stuff that's out there.
Some people there are, but in Spike's case, I mean, he's made that and some movies, Girl 6, Clockers.
Ooh, I like Clockers.
Oh.
No?
You would have to pay me cash money to get me to watch that.
Silent Green!
I think we might.
People!
Throw down after this?
Zardoz has spoken.
My God. Are you going to be the first 3 weeks in a row guest on Film Sociology? I don't want to let you go, man.
Well, I am seeing Date Night next. The only person locally, because they're not showing it to us here in Indianapolis.
Okay, better out than in. I don't want you getting an ulcer. Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, thank you so much for sitting in 2 weeks in a row. Maybe three. We'll see.
We'll see how much I bribe you after the show.
Uh-huh. And thanks to Emma Sosi for her insight and shout-outs. Go Butler. I hate to say it, I grew up in Michigan, so if Michigan State makes it, I'm not going to be torn either.
Go Dogs.
Yes. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. And it's a podcast on Monday. Bye.